obvious that he was, and I think to me, what makes the film so wonderful to me is that it's about how genius is not always in the most romantic of packages. How most geniuses are strange. They do have conflict. They do have these conflicts in themselves. They are odd, often odd-looking sociopaths, you know? Sometimes they're charming. This man, we found out, was kind of simian. He was kind of ape-like, in a sense. He was working class, but he had this amazing soul, this poetic soul. This, he was an autodidact, but then he had the opportunity to synthesize and assimilate all this genius that was around him. You know, he was a great fan of Claude Lorrain's Titians. He absorbed all these people. So this contradiction between this slightly brutish, but you know, a man with love in his heart, but not quite sure where to put it, and this amazing visual genius that he has, was quite a very interesting thing to investigate.
Question here, then the lady.
Good morning, Yi Xiong Kang from Cine.com. So first of all, congratulations for the great performances, appealing dialogues. So I got a question for Mr. Lee, please. So in your earlier works, you normally didn't have scripts at the very beginning, and you developed the plot and dialogues with the characters within the rehearsals, and recorded them as the screenplay, and you made the films strictly according to the screenplay. But this time, Mr. Turner, he was a historical figure. He's a real person, and I heard that you tried really hard to try to reestablish the scenes at that era by studying his paintings.
Say the last thing again.
You spent lots of time and tried really hard to reestablish the scenes from his era by studying his paintings. So it seems to me that the freedom of improvisation was much less than earlier. How did this work out? Did you still give the freedom of within the rehearsals to your actors as earlier? Thank you.
This film is actually no different from any of my other films. If you remember, we made a film 15 years ago called Topsy Turvy, which was about the Victorian theatre. And that has in common with this film, of course, that we were dramatising historical characters, and the job was to bring to life that world in a poetic and free, and not in a documentary way, but still in a way with the responsibility to create a reality that was properly grounded in the research. You can read all the books in the world, you can research for a million years, but it doesn't make things happen in front of the camera. It doesn't make Turner happen in front of the camera. You still have to create a characterization. We still have to breathe flesh and blood into it. So what we did is exactly what we always do, which is to create these characters to work and to develop the whole world of the film. But added to that was all the research that informed our decisions. But in the end, you still have to kind of make it happen. And there was no script, as always.
Karen Batt for the Huffington Post. A question for Mr. Lee and for Mr. Pope afterwards. For Mr. Lee, since this is a movie about an artist made by an artist, I can't help thinking, is there any way you connect to the character, for example, any traits that he has, his obsession with sketching, and also, in conjunction with a question just asked before, how do you define spiritual? How did you see him as spiritual? How do you define it? And if it might inspire death, I also saw a lot of issues with death and sickness as much as spiritual. So those are my questions. And for Mr. Pope, you had a big challenge to recreate this.
Yes, let me answer your question. He won't escape.
Okay.
He'll try, but you know, I've been asked a number of times, though you're not quite asking me this, whether this film is in some way an autobiography. It isn't. But on the other hand, I mean, two things are very clear and non-negotiable. One is that whatever one makes a film about, whoever the characters, for me, the kind of films that I'm concerned with, it has to come from an empathy, an understanding of the characters, whoever they are, whatever they are. And the second thing is that, of course, you know, we are artists, therefore we do naturally understand the territory that we're making a film about. But that isn't the same thing as it being a kind of narcissistic investigation of ourselves. With respect, I think the question... I've been asked a number of tough questions at press conferences at Cannes, but how do I define spiritual is the hardest I've heard so far. I mean, you know... Turner paints... You could say a painter paints what he sees. Turner stands on a clifftop and he paints the seascape, he paints the sky, and we know that there are infinite numbers of people who paint pictures of what they see, who put down what they see and record it in a, what you could call a photographic way. We know that when Turner does that, he sees beyond the sea and the sky. He brings to it an experience and shares with us and makes us see an experience that goes beyond the surface. And that is about the whole thing of living and, as you say, dying and life, what life is about. And I guess, not wanting to degenerate into being pretentious, that is what I would mean and understand by spiritual.
Can I just add a little thing to that? Turner was what we call very much in the centre a painter of the sublime. Mm-hmm. Not in the word we use, the way we use it now, like sublime. You know, like the sublime meant the tension between man's involvement in the beauty and the horror of nature. The beauty and the horror of the nature and the horror in the beauty of nature. And that was very much something. It grew out of the romantic painters. Not again a word that's come to mean something else. A romantic painter was very much what Mike said. A person. The romantic painters were the first painters who painted what they felt about what they saw, not what they saw. So coming from the romantic into sublime. The sublime is about horror and beauty and man's futility within it, and that is what Turner was trying to record. From his very, very guts.
And the question to Mr. Poe.
It must be a big challenge to recreate in your shots the beauty of an artist like Turner. And if you could say a few words about your choices and how you... It was beautiful to watch these scenes.
Well, the choices started off with me researching the palette that Turner used in his paintings. And it's on public display, actually, at Tate Britain, including his colours, the way he used them, are all documented there. So I started by researching the colours that he actually used for the paintings, and then we devised a palette ourselves based on that. So that was the only real rigorous... choices that I made was to try and tell the story with the pictures, with the colours that he used at that time.
I think it would be true to say, wouldn't it, that, and this applies to what we've all done on this film, is that when you really start to really research something and really investigate it, and go into it on all kinds of levels and at all kinds of depths, but then it gets into your bloodstream, it gets into your psyche in some way, and that informs, so that we made decisions which by the time we made the film having prepared, we weren't necessarily consciously actually saying this is that painting or this is, you know, it was there, as I say, in our bloodstream, because that's the name of the job, really, is to kind of embrace it and absorb it, and then to allow our creative subconscious to inform the decisions we make.
I had been in that process of in that world for a long time, because Mike and I talked about the film for many years before we made it. So by the time we hit it, I was very well grounded in the work and the research, for the nuts and bolts of photography. But we had talked and talked endlessly about making this film for many years, and so it was a project, a love project of love.
Question here.
Good morning, Peter Howell from the Toronto Star. Congratulations on the film. Question for Mike Lee. Mr. Lee, I noticed that your Palm winner, Secrets and Lies, is going to be a stamp for the Royal Mail. Do you take that as a good omen for the Palme d'Or with Mr. Turner? And also, does this now elevate you to the status of British icon, or were you there already?
Well, it's nice to have two silly questions. I mean, it's great. It's great that Secrets and Lies is on a stamp. It's unfortunately on a stamp that's more expensive than the one I normally use when I send a letter. They asked me for a quotation, the Royal Mail, publicity people. They said, can we have a quotation to go with, so that we can sell it? And I said, and I thought, well, I don't know what you say. So the quotation is, I hope that that nobody that ever uses this stamp should forget about the thousands of babies that are given away for adoption every year. Because, in the end, the film is about something, and about something important, and I thought that maybe people should be reminded of that. What was your other... something to do with icons or something?
Are you
what?
Are you there?
Does this make you an official British icon now? Or were you already a British icon?
Does this elevate you to that status, that maybe the same status as Mr. Turner?
I hope, as a profoundly iconoclastic person, I will resist the temptation to be an icon that you are suggesting I might be seduced into indulging myself.
I think being an icon is a bit like being accused of being eccentric. You don't know if you're eccentric.
I think I know, and as indeed you do, we're more aware of being eccentrics than we are of being icons.
I think I'd take the eccentric.